Chapter 6. Dark figure obscured the lighted doorway of the manager's hut, vanished. Then, a second or so after, the doorway itself vanished too. We stopped, and the silence driven away by the stamping of our feet flowed back again from the recesses of the land. The great wall of vegetation, an exuberant and entangled mass of trunks, branches, leaves, boughs, festoons, motionless in the moonlight, was like a rioting invasion of soundless life, a rolling wave of plants, piled up, crested, ready to topple over the creek, to sweep every little man of us out of his little existence. And it moved not. A deadened burst of mighty splashes and snorts reached us from afar, as though an ichthyosaurus had been taking a bath of glitter in the great river. After all, apostrophe said the Boilermaker in a reasonable tone, why shouldn't we get the rivets? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why not, indeed? I did not know of any reason why we shouldn't. They'll come in 3 weeks, apostrophe I said confidently. But they didn't. Instead of rivets there came an invasion, an infliction, a visitation. It came in sections during the next 3 weeks, each section headed by a donkey carrying a white man in new clothes and tan shoes, bowing from that elevation right and left to the impressed pilgrims. A quarrelsome band of footsore sulky niggers trod on the heels of the donkeys, a lot of tents, camp stools, tin boxes, white cases, brown bales would be shot down in the courtyard, and the air of mystery would deepen a little over the muddle of the station. 5 such installments came, with their absurd air of disorderly flight with the loot of innumerable outfit shops and provision stores, that, one would think, they were lugging, after a raid, into the wilderness for equitable division. It was an inextricable mess of things decent in themselves, but that human folly made look like the spoils of thieving. This devoted band called itself the El Dorado Exploring Expedition, and I believe they were sworn to secrecy. Their talk, however, was the talk of sordid buccaneers. It was reckless without hardihood, greedy without audacity, and cruel without courage. There was not an atom of foresight, or of serious intention in the whole batch of them, and they did not seem aware these things are wanted for the work of the world. To tear treasure out of the bowels of the El, and was their desire, with no more moral purpose at the back of it than there is in burglars breaking into a safe. Who paid the expenses of the noble enterprise I don't know, but the uncle of our manager was leader of that lot. In exterior he resembled a butcher in a poor neighborhood, and his eyes had a look of sleepy cunning. He carried his fat paunch with ostentation on his short legs, and during the time his gang infested the station spoke to no one but his nephew. You could see these two roaming about all day long with their heads close together in an everlasting confab. I had given up worrying myself about the rivets. One's capacity for that kind of folly is more limited than you would suppose. I said hang, and let things slide. I had plenty of time for meditation, and now and then I would give some thought to Kurtz. I wasn't very interested in him. No. Still, I was curious to see whether this man, who had come out equipped with moral ideas of some sort, would climb to the top after all, and how he would set about his work when there. One evening as I was lying flat on the deck of my steamboat, I heard voices approaching, and there were the nephew and the uncle strolling along the bank. I laid my head on my arm again, and had nearly lost myself in a doze, when somebody said in my ear as it were, I am as harmless as a little child, but I don't like to be dictated to. Am I the manager, or am I not? I was ordered to send him there. It's incredible. I became aware that the two were standing on the shore alongside the forepart of the steamboat, just below my head. I did not move. It did not occur to me to move. I was sleepy. It is unpleasant, apostrophe grunted the uncle. He has asked the administration to be sent there, apostrophe said the other, with the idea of showing what he could do, and I was instructed accordingly. Look at the influence that man must have. Is it not frightful? apostrophe they both agreed it was frightful, then made several bizarre remarks. Make rain and fine weather one man the council by the nose bits of absurd sentences, that got the better of my drowsiness, so that I had pretty near the whole of my wits about me when the uncle said, the climate may do away with this difficulty for you. Is he alone there? Apostrophe apostrophe yes, apostrophe answered the manager. He sent his assistant down the river with a note to me in these terms, colon, clear this poor devil out of the country, and don't bother sending more of that sort. I had rather be alone than have the kind of men you can dispose of with me. It was more than a year ago. Can you imagine such impudence? Apostrophe apostrophe anything since then? Apostrophe asked the other, hoarsely. Ivory, apostrophe jerked the nephew. Lots of it prime sort, lots most annoying, from him. Apostrophe apostrophe and with that? Apostrophe questioned the heavy rumble. Invoice, apostrophe was the reply fired out, so to speak. Then silence. They had been talking about Kurtz. I was broad awake by this time, but, lying perfectly at ease, remained still, having no inducement to change my position. How did that ivory come all this way? Apostrophe growled the elder man, who seemed very vexed. The other explained that it had come with a fleet of canoes in charge of an English half-caste clerk Kurtz had with him, that Kurtz had apparently intended to return himself, the station being by that time bare of goods and stores, but after coming 300 miles, had suddenly decided to go back, which he started to do alone in a small dugout with four paddlers, leaving the half-caste to continue down the river with the ivory. The two fellows there seemed astounded at anybody attempting such a thing. They were at a loss for an adequate motive. As to me, I seemed to see Kurtz for the first time. It was a distinct glimpse. The dugout, four paddling savages, and the lone white man turning his back suddenly on the headquarters, on relief, on thoughts of home perhaps, setting his face towards the depths of the wilderness, towards his empty and desolate station. I did not know the motive. Perhaps he was just simply a fine fellow who stuck to his work for its own sake. His name, you understand, had not been pronounced once. He was that man. Apostrophe apostrophe the half-caste, who, as far as I could see, had conducted a difficult trip with great prudence and pluck, was invariably alluded to as that scoundrel. Apostrophe apostrophe the scoundrel had reported that the man had been very ill, had recovered imperfectly. Dot 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 the two below me moved away then a few paces, and strolled back and forth at some little distance. I heard. Military post doctor 200 miles quite alone now unavoidable delays 9 months no news strange rumors. Apostrophe apostrophe they approached again, just as the manager was saying, no one, as far as I know, unless a species of wandering trader a pestilential fellow, snapping ivory from the natives. Apostrophe apostrophe who was it they were talking about now? I gathered in snatches that this was some man supposed to be in Kurtz's district, and of whom the manager did not approve. We will not be free from unfair competition till one of these fellows is hanged for an example, apostrophe he said. Certainly, apostrophe grunted the other, get him hanged. Why not? Anything can be done in this country. That's what I say. Nobody here, you understand, here, can endanger your position. And why? You stand the climate, you outlast them all. The danger is in Europe. But there before I left I took care, to apostrophe they moved off and whispered, then their voices rose again. The extraordinary series of delays is not my fault. I did my possible. Apostrophe apostrophe the fat man sighed, very sad. Apostrophe and the pestiferous absurdity of his talk, apostrophe continued the other, he bothered me enough when he was here. Atch station should be like a beacon on the road towards better things, a center for trade of course, but also for humanizing, improving, instructing. Conceive you that ass. And he wants to be manager. No, it's apostrophe here. He got choked by excessive indignation, and I lifted my head the least bit. I was surprised to see how near they were right under me. I could have spat upon their hats. They were looking on the ground, absorbed in thought. The manager was switching his leg with a slender twig. His sagacious relative lifted his head. You have been well since you came out this time? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked. The other gave a start. Who? I? Oh. Like a charm. But the rest, oh, my goodness. All sick. They die so quick too, that I haven't the time to send them out of the country. It's incredible. Apostrophe, apostrophe, H, apostrophe, M. Just so, apostrophe, grunted the uncle. Ah. My boy, trust to this, I say, trust to this. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I saw him extend his short flipper of an arm for a gesture that took in the forest, the creek, the mud, the river, seemed to beckon with a dishonoring flourish before the sunlit face of the land, a treacherous appeal to the lurking death, to the hidden evil, to the profound darkness of its heart. It was so startling that I leaped to my feet and looked back at the edge of the forest, as though I had expected an answer of some sort to that black display of confidence. You know the foolish notions that come to one sometimes. The high stillness confronted these two figures with its ominous patience, waiting for the passing away of a fantastic invasion. They swore loud together out of sheer fright, I believe, then pretending not to know anything of my existence, turned back to the station. The sun was low, and leaning forward side by side, they seemed to be tugging painfully uphill their two ridiculous shadows of unequal length, that trailed behind them slowly over the tall grass without bending a single blade. In a few days the El Dorado expedition went into the patient wilderness that closed upon it as the sea closes over a diver. Long afterwards the news came that all the donkeys were dead. I know nothing as to the fate of the less valuable animals. They, no doubt, like the rest of us, found what they deserved. I did not inquire. I was then rather excited at the prospect of meeting Kurtz very soon. When I say very soon, I mean it comparatively. It was just 2 months from the day we left the creek, when we came to the bank below Kurtz's Stottion. Going up that river was like traveling back to the earliest beginnings of the world, when vegetation rioted on the earth, and the big trees were kings. An empty stream, a great silence, an impenetrable forest. The air was warm, thick, heavy, sluggish. There was no joy in the brilliance of sunshine. The long stretches of the waterway ran on, deserted, into the gloom of overshadowed distances. On silvery sandbanks, hippos and alligators sunned themselves side by side. The broadening waters flowed through a mob of wooded islands. You lost your way on that river as you would in a desert, and butted all day long against shoals, trying to find the channel, till you thought yourself bewitched and cut off forever from everything you had known once somewhere far away in another existence perhaps. There were moments when one's past came back to one, as it will sometimes, when you have not a moment to spare to yourself. But it came in the shape of an unrestful and noisy dream, remembered with wonder amongst the overwhelming realities of this strange world of plants, and water, and silence. And this stillness of life did not in the least resemble a peace. It was the stillness of an implacable force brooding over an inscrutable intentation. It looked at you with a vengeful aspect. I got used to it afterwards. I did not see it anymore. I had no time. I had to keep guessing at the channel. I had to discern, mostly by inspiration, the signs of hidden banks. I watched for sunken stones. I was learning to clap my teeth smartly before my heart flew out, when I shaved by a fluke some infernal sly old snag that would have ripped the life out of the tin pot steamboat and drowned all the pilgrims. I had to keep a lookout for the signs of dead wood we could cut up in the night for next day's steaming. When you have to attend to things of that sort, to the mere incidents of the surface, the reality, I tell you, fades. The inner truth is hidden luckily, but I felt it all the same, I felt off in its mysterious stillness watching me at my monkey tricks, just as it watches you fellows performing on your respective tight ropes for what is it? Half a crown a tumble, try to be civil, Marlowe, growled a voice, and I knew there was at least one listener awake besides myself. I beg your pardon. I forgot the heartache which makes up the rest of the price. And indeed, what does the price matter, if the trick be well done? You do your tricks very well. And I didn't do badly either, since I managed not to sink that steamboat on my first trip. It's a wonder to me yet. Imagine a blindfolded man set to drive a van over a bad road. I sweated and shivered over that business considerably, I can tell you. After all, for a seaman, to scrape the bottom of the thing that's supposed to float all the time under his care, is the unpardonable sin. No one may know of it, but you never forget the thump, eh? A blow on the very heart. You remember it, you dream of it, you wake up at night, and think of it years after, and go hot and cold all over. I don't pretend to say that steamboat floated all the time. More than once as he had to wait for a bit, with 20 cannibals splashing around and pushing. We had enlisted some of these chaps on the way for a crew. Fine fellows cannibals in their place. They were men one could work with, and I am grateful to them. And, after all, they did not eat each other before my face. They had brought along a provision of hippo meat which went rotten, and made the mystery of the wilderness stink in my nostrils. Phew! I can sniff it now. I had the manager on board, and three or four pilgrims with their staves all complete. Sometimes we came upon a station close by the bank, clinging to the skirts of the unknown, and the white men rushing out of a tumble-down hovel, with great gestures of joy and surprise and welcome, seemed very strange, at the appearance of being held there captive by a spell. The word ivory would ring in the air for a while, and on we went again into the silence, along empty reaches, round the still bends, between the high walls of our winding way, reverberating in hollow claps the ponderous beat of the stern wheel. Trees, trees, millions of trees, massive, immense, running up high, and at their foot, hugging the bank against the stream, crept the little bedroom steamboat, like a sluggish beetle crawling on the floor of a lofty portico. It made you feel very small, very lost, and yet it was not altogether depressing, that feeling. After all, if you were small, the grimy beetle crawled on which was just what you wanted it to do. Where the pilgrims imagined it crawled to, I don't know. To some place where they expected to get something, I... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.